This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Some are calling 2019 the year of the vegan. This diet free of animal products has some pretty famous fans, including Jay-Z and Beyonce. But last year, the Gallup poll found that only 3% of all Americans identify as vegan and only 5% as vegetarian. The Economist reports that a quarter of Americans between ages 24 and 35 identify. Now, following this regimen is getting easier, with meatless Mondays, fast casual salads, even a McVegan burger at McDonald's. But what if you don't live in a city with vegan options at restaurants, or you can't afford soy hot dogs or tempeh burgers? Is veganism really for anyone? Joining us in studio is Stephanie Tarnowski, the sous chef at The Fancy Radish, a high-end vegan restaurant here in Washington. She's been vegan for more than 13 years. Stephanie, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Joining us from Atlanta is Afia Ibamu, a holistic nutritionist and the author of vegan cookbooks. Her latest is called The Vegan Soul Food Guide to the Galaxy. Afia, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And joining us from Harvard is Dr. Walter Willett, a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the university's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He has studied diets for more than 40 years. Dr. Willett, welcome.
Good to be with you.
Let me just say off the top, Afia, that we have gotten a lot of comments. Oh, my Lord in heaven, there is so much interest in this topic. And I'm not surprised, but I think maybe the best place to start is a little bit with your journey. Why did you decide to become a vegan, Afia?
Well, I was very sick as a kid. I had allergies and irritable bowel syndrome, chronic dehydration. I was on all types of medication. And then when I was 15, my mother found a doctor that said it could be the foods that I was eating. And that was my first time really correlating food with health. And then hip hop was out then, too. And there was an artist called KRS-One. And he had a song called Beef about being a vegetarian and the food industry. And then I was like, yo, I'm a vegetarian now, you know. And then my health improved. But it wasn't until we moved to Brooklyn, New York, and there's a sister there named Queen Afua, who's like an OG in just holistic health and healing. And my boyfriend, my husband now at the time, Stick of Dead Prez, he got gout. And I was like, okay, we're vegan now. And we healed him naturally through a plant-based diet. My mother got MS. We healed her naturally through a plant-based diet. And that kind of just continued my journey on becoming a holistic nutritionist and getting my degree in nutrition as well.
When you say healed, do you mean that their symptoms and the conditions disappeared or they're more manageable now? Elaborate on that.
Well, this was I've been plant-based for 29 years, vegan for 23. My husband got gout. It's been over 20 years and he hasn't had it since. It took us literally 2 weeks. He wasn't on any of the medication. My mother, I put her on a raw food diet with some herbs and supplements for 1 month, and her symptoms went away. And that was over 20 years ago. She still has MS, but she is way more manageable. She's not in a wheelchair. You know, it had been 2 years that she had it before we did her healing program, and she would fall down. Her speech was slurred. She was almost in a wheelchair, and all of that reversed, and that was 20 years ago. So
wow.
She's now, you know, living. She still has MS, but it's definitely not where it was back then, and she lives a better quality of life.
Stephanie Tarnowski, what about you? What made you decide to become a vegan?
I stopped eating meat when I was a kid. It was like a knee-jerk kid reaction to like liking animals and akinning, like, I have a pet. Why would I want to eat other animals? And so that was, you know, that's how I was for a few years. And then I went to college. I actually started at American University. And I don't know. I think it was a little bit of trying to rebel. And I met a bunch of other vegans when I started school and pretty much became vegan that way. And it was really an animal rights thing to start. I just really could not separate, like, my love of, you know, other living creatures and then feeling like it was okay to eat them.
Dr. Willett, let me bring you into the conversation. I wonder how your studies of diet over the last few decades have affected what you eat. Are you vegan or vegetarian, or are there any aspects of veganism or vegetarianism that factor into your diet?
I'm not a vegan. I grew up in the Midwest, and lots of meat and lots of dairy were right at the center of our diets, as most Midwesterners then and still even now consume. But my work is to look at this issue through a scientific lens, looking at health as the outcome, and also more recently a deeper look at the environmental consequences of what we eat. I find it helpful to think about diets, different diets, as a spectrum. On one end, we have the paleo people, and I can tell you many of them are just as enthusiastic about that as are a number of vegans about their diet. And on the other hand, we have vegan diets. But in between those poles, there's a very wide spectrum. This is a continuum. And we've done research now, studies lasting up to almost 40 years. Other people have done many other kinds of studies, too, looking at short-term controlled feeding studies with risk factors for heart disease and diabetes is the outcome. And the evidence is very strong now that moving more toward the vegan end of the spectrum, the plant-based end of the spectrum, is better for health. There are lower risk of type 2 diabetes, lower risks of heart disease, and lower risk of overall mortality.
And Dr. Willett, I'm sorry, just to be clear, when you said there's paleo on one end of the spectrum and vegan on the other end, define paleo. What is that?
There are, of course, different flavors of paleo. I was referring to the paleo diet that's mostly red meat. It's an important point that the major feature of the paleo diet and the one that really does make a difference in terms of health is cutting out on refined carbohydrates and sugar. And one can eat that kind of diet and be a vegan, too. But as we get toward the vegan end of the spectrum, there is quite a number of choices of different vegetarian diets or what many people call a flexitarian diet that is mostly, largely plant-based, but with modest amounts of dairy and fish and sometimes some poultry and meat on occasion.
Right.
And from a health standpoint, all of those are very healthy, and it's not necessarily the case that vegan is the healthiest there. There's a little bit of suggestion that having some fish in there, which provides some omega-3 fatty acids that can be low in vegan diets, can be advantageous.
You're talking about diets like, say, the Mediterranean diet? Is that one of those that...
Exactly. The Mediterranean diet would fall into this category of flexitarian diet, where, again, largely plant-based, small amounts of animal-sourced foods, and meat a few times a year or on special events.
I do want to talk more about some of those different dietary options in just a moment, Doctor. Just to remind folks that we are speaking to Dr. Walter Willett, a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Stephanie Tarnowski is sous chef at the Fancy Radish here in D.C., and Afia Ibamu, a holistic nutritionist and the author of a number of cookbooks, including The Vegan Soul Food Guide to the Galaxy and The Vegan Remix. Let me get to some of your stories about your diets. Jeffrey emailed, "As a physician for over 20 years, being vegan is like breastfeeding. There are good reasons for and good reasons against. My daughters both avoid animal products due to concerns about the treatment of animals and the environment. I still rely on a traditional diet and don't feel I need to explain that to anyone." Suzanne writes, "I challenge everyone to try it for 7 days, then 30 days. You'll feel horrible for a few days as you detox from the junk you've been consuming, and then you'll feel tremendous." Stephanie, I see you nodding in response to that. Is that what happened to you?
I mean, it's been so long, but I know people who have gone that route, and they're like, man, I feel terrible for the first few days. And that's always what I tell everyone. It's just like, it gets easier, and it's like anything, just kind of flush it out of your system and you won't even miss it.
Now contrast that with Whitney's response to Suzanne, which Whitney writes, "No thanks, cheese is life." Sandra tweeted, "I'm 80% vegan for two reasons. One, as a dairy farmer's daughter, I can't quite give up real ice cream. And two, I'm not a food fascist. I will eat small amounts of fish and chicken if I'm at the tables of friends and family." Afia, could you respond to Sandra's comment about just being 80% but not 100%?
Well, with our brand RBG Fit Club, we promote mostly plant-based, right? So it's about exactly what she said. You can go from 80% to 100% plant-based. But eating more plants is the goal, right? But if you are eating meat or animal products, it definitely should be organic, free range, wild. that kind of thing, and only be 3 ounces or less, you know, per serving that you're having, so it's not affecting your health.
Yeah, with regards to that, Beth tweeted, how do the panelists feel about free-range eggs and ethically sourced dairy? We heard what Fia thinks. Stephanie, what about you? Free-range, ethically sourced, if someone does choose to get in some dairy products?
I don't think it's important to be on, like, a high horse about it. I think if you do want to incorporate eggs and dairy into your diet, you should. I think that it's really about moving, like, towards that diet, and that's more important. And free range, I'm always a little skeptical on what that necessarily means, and if, you know, if eggs and dairy are actually coming from a place that is ethically sourced.
You can trust the label, basically.
Exactly. But you know, I really do think that it's about getting people interested in it, and even if that means just like cutting, you know, eggs, meat, and dairy out of your diet a couple days a week. I think that's wonderful.
Let me stick with you for a second, Stephanie, because we got a number of comments about animal welfare and animal treatment. Adam writes, according to the UN, animal agriculture is one of the most potent contributors to climate change. By reducing the amount of meat and other animal products in our diets, we can all greatly reduce greenhouse gas emissions. There is no doubt that a reduction in animal agriculture is going to be a necessary part of the solution. Just one of several comments we got about the impact of animals on our diet and on the world. Here is another one that a listener left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Rebecca from Cape Coral. I'm calling about the veganism question that you posed. I became a vegan because of the fact that I feel that the earth is more sustainable, our resources are more sustainable because of it. And also, I place a high value on animals and wildlife and the preservation of them and our natural resources and our environment and climate. I feel much better about myself that I became a vegan, and I wish more people would. I think it would solve a lot of the world's problems.
Rebecca, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Stephanie, are there any particular environmental impacts that you feel the most proud of having an influence on as a result of folks like you going vegan?
Obviously, there is, you know, like grazing for animals is just like a huge, takes up huge tracts of land. And obviously animals produce, cows especially, produce a lot of greenhouse gases. And by not consuming animal products, that's a really great environmental, positive environmental impact. Obviously that was something, like the environmental aspect was something that I kind of grew to understand more as I got older as being a vegan. And, you know, it is something I think is really important to consider.
Dr. Willett, what has your research shown in terms of the environmental impact? Are there different kinds of environmental impacts between, say, the way that cattle are raised versus chickens are raised? Like, what does your research show?
Yeah, there are absolutely huge impacts and differences in terms of our choice of foods, and especially our protein sources. Actually, I've been co-chairing an international commission on this topic that will be coming out in about 2 weeks in The Lancet with a lot of details on that. But as your callers or correspondents and both Stephanie and Afia have mentioned, being more toward the vegan end of the spectrum makes a huge difference in terms of greenhouse gas production and climate change. And I think if we really care about the world our children and grandchildren will inherit, we do need to shift toward that end of the spectrum of diets. And the good news is that it's not just our planet will be more healthy, but we will be more healthy as well. Again, it's not absolute. We don't have, not everybody has to be 100% vegan. And in a sustainable food supply, there is room for some small amount of animal-sourced food production. There is a huge challenge in that we're going to need to feed close to 10 billion people by 2050. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we want to do it with a diet that's both healthy and sustainable. To do that probably means that on lands that are not possible to use for crop production, there is some space for some modest amount of grazing. And in small amounts of meat production and dairy production. But the big picture culture, as everyone has said, is not that everybody has to be 100% vegan, but largely plant-based diets.
Want to get to some of the critiques of being vegan. Kristen tweets, I completely respect a person's choice to become vegan based on their beliefs. What bothers me is when it is stated that humans aren't supposed to eat meat. As a biologist, all you have to do is look at our omnivore teeth to know that this is not true. We want to answer some of your questions about veganism, get to some of the critiques, and maybe some suggestions on how to try going vegan if you're willing to give up that beef when we continue. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Withings, creator of the Wi-Fi Smart Scale. Meet your goals with a smart scale that delivers weight, BMI, and body composition, even a local weather report. See why Tom's Guide named Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale of 2018. Visit withings.com/NPR for 30% off any body composition scale. Withings, giving people the tools they need to improve their lives.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, and on the next How I Built This, how two women with no background in fitness set up some stationary bikes, dimmed the lights, boosted the music, and created a cult following and a multi-million dollar business called SoulCycle. You can find How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.
A quick note before we get back to our conversation, to those of you listening in Southern California, you can come see us live as part of an event with KPCC. We'll be talking about the complicated relationship between California and the rest of the country, from politics to the economy, innovation, immigration, and more. The event takes place at the Skirball Cultural Center in LA on Tuesday, January 15th. You can get your tickets online at kpcc.org/in-person. Back now to our conversation with Stephanie Tarnowski, Afia Ibamu, and Dr. Walter Willett. We'll get to some more of your questions and stories as we can. We'll get to as many of them as we can. You have destroyed our inbox has exploded with any Afia, this is an amazing, like, look, we knew this was going to be a hot topic, but this has melted our inbox. Do you find that too, that when people find out you're a vegan, that just drags the conversation in a whole nother direction?
It does.
Or do you mostly hang with vegans so you ain't got to deal with that no more?
Well, no, I hang with all kind of folks. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I think vegans can be sometimes a little bit too judgmental, you know, and holier than thou and, you know, all that stuff. But you definitely get a lot of questions, which is why I wrote my book, The Vegan Soul Food Guide to the Galaxy, because it's a cookbook and a guide where I answer questions like, where can I eat out? You know, I show you where you can eat out anywhere in the world as a vegan. When you go to restaurants, what kind of foods to order. When you go to the grocery store, what kind of foods to buy. Where to get your nutrients. You know, everyone's like, where do you get your protein and all of that stuff. As well as there's soul food recipes like candy yams, collard greens, cornbread, sweet potato pie, potato salad, all the stuff we love from soul food, but it's vegan. And no white rice, white flour, or white sugar. So I wrote that book just to answer all the questions that I got all the time and to help people guide them through the process because I've been doing it for so long.
I'd be fascinated to hear more about how you do soul food, particularly because certain things like collard greens are prepared with like a ham hock in the water to flavor the collard greens, and some of those meat products are, for many recipes, inherent to the food. Nzinga tweeted, the most common comment I receive when people find out I'm plant-based is, you eat like white people. There is a perception that the lifestyle is one for Caucasians. Afia?
Well, and that's true. And the thing is that there is a Western view of veganism, which, you know, it makes sense because of how the Western world raises food and its ideology. But this is not new. You know what I'm saying? There's cultures that are thousands of years old that have vegan food and it's part of the culture, whether it's Indian or Ethiopian or even the Rastafarian tradition. They all have vegan options because that's part of their life. So it's not a new thing at all.
With regards to the idea of vegans being a little bit pushy, we wanted to play a quick clip from a comedy video that went viral back in 2016. Maybe you've seen it in your Facebook feed at some point. This is J.P. Sears in a video that's called If Meat Eaters Acted Like Vegans. Listen.
It's not that vegetable eaters are bad people. It's just that they're terrible people. This sausage is a meat-based vegetable substitute for cucumber. It's got the taste and the texture of an actual cucumber. with none of the cucumber. Eating plants makes your body way too alkaline, which will definitely kill you. Do you really want that? All you need is some meat to be healthy and thrive. You get everything you need from meat. Beef is loaded with carbs.
JP Sears in the video of meat eaters acted like vegans. By the way, beef is not loaded with carbs, so please let's just cross that off right there. But Stephanie, I get the perception. I mean, he's obviously being a little hyperbolic, but there is...
Just a little.
But, you know, I know lots of people, I've encountered it myself, very well-meaning people who are vegan or vegetarian, and when they find out that, you know, I love a good ribeye and I'm not really willing to part with it, man, does that spark an argument. It's happened to me more than once. What's up with that?
You know, I can identify because I think I 100% used to be that way, especially when I was younger and a little bit newer to this diet and, you know, was 18 and thought I knew everything about everything.
As most 18-year-olds do.
Oh, yeah, we sure do. Right. But, you know, I have so many friends of varying diets. I work in a vegan restaurant, and that's great, but not even, you know, our staff isn't even all vegan by any means. It's not a requirement to work there. And, you know, like this, like the pushy vegan is frustrating, and it's like, it is frustrating for me because I think it's like more important to just get people interested in something, and you do that positively, and by, you know, attacking somebody's views is probably not going to be the way to do it. And you know, I certainly, you know, I know that there's times when I'll still like have a conversation with somebody and we'll be talking about food because inevitably it comes up, and sure, sometimes I catch myself being a little like, but you know, if you didn't, I try and cut myself off because I know that that's just not going to be the way to make it work.
Well, but Dr. Willett, let's take the flip side of this. What if those pushy vegans are right? What if they are correct that in a nation where a third of us are overweight or obese, that we do need to back off from eating meat, beef, cheese, processed meats, processed foods, refined sugars, that maybe we do need more plants in our diet, that we are on a planet where carbon levels are rising because of human actions, where climate change is real? What if the vegans are right, pushy or not? What does the evidence say in terms of who should win that argument?
Yes, the evidence is absolutely clear that vegans are right, that we need to be moving strongly in that direction. We have followed in our own research several hundred thousand people for now almost up to 40 years and tracked them carefully over time, monitoring their diets, monitoring who gets cancer, who gets heart disease, who dies. And it's very clear that people with a more plant-based diet survive better, are healthier in every way that we look at them, including better cognitive function. And it's very clear that from an environmental standpoint, this is going to be critical for, again, the future of our future generations. And part of it is that cattle are just hugely inefficient in converting the grain that we feed them into feed, and in the process generate massive amounts of methane, carbon dioxide, that are very potent greenhouse gases. As a number of your callers have said, the world is really not sustainable if we go forward with diets like Americans are consuming. Mm-hmm. So they are right. But again, there is some, it's not 100%, and Stephanie and Afia have mentioned that too. By the way, is that the right way to say your name? I worked in Tanzania for a number of years, and we would pronounce that in Swahili, Afia. And if your listeners don't know, that means health, which is really neat that you have such a name.
Yes, it is. Yes, it does. And you're correct.
I also wanted to ask you, Dr. Willett, about some of the objections that folks had on kind of a more physiological and dietary level to veganism, or questions at least. Mary is listening in Greenville, West Virginia, and Mary emails, "Our bodies are not designed to be either vegetarian or vegan. Look in your mouth. We have the teeth of omnivores, not herbivores. We are designed to eat both plants and animals. Also, vegans cannot get vitamin B from a vegan diet. In order to remain healthy, vegans must have an advanced society that produces that vitamin for them. The vegan diet is neither natural for humans nor healthy." Dr. Willett, is that true?
There are some good points there, and thank you. I wanted to make a few of those. First of all, the human organism is amazing that we are extremely adaptable to a wide range of diets, from almost entirely plant-based or 100% plant-based to animal-based, and we can live through the ages that allow us to reproduce and live in incredibly different environments. That's amazing. But if we really want to be maximally healthy on into our 70s, 80s, and 90s, the evidence is very clear, based on, again, short-term feeding studies, long-term follow-up of hundreds of thousands of people, that a more plant-based diet will lead us to be healthier in the long run. But there are a few comments, critical nutritional issues about the vegan diet. One, your correspondent is correct that vegans will become deficient in vitamin B12 if they don't get it from some source. That can be from modest amounts of animal source foods or from supplements or fortified foods. But a strictly vegan diet can lead to vitamin B12 deficiency, not all B vitamins, but that specifically. And the consequences of deficiency are serious, especially in terms of growing children, inadequate development of their nervous system, and adults can lead to neuropathies and seizures, lots of problems. So that is really critical. Also, there are, again, lots of flavors of vegan diets. And I really admire what Stephanie and Afia are doing, because they're producing and showing everyday people that vegan diets can be enjoyable and healthy. But there's a lot of flavors of vegan diets that just emphasize reduction of red meat and load up with lots of unhealthy carbohydrates, refined starches, and sugar. And a lot of them are very high in sodium, too, because for flavor, people can add a lot of salt.
Right.
So just because something is free of animal source foods does not automatically mean it's healthy. And you can say that about almost any diet. But what's really critical is a healthy vegan or healthy primarily plant-based diet.
And what about the comment about our teeth, whether we are physiologically designed to be omnivores and not herbivores?
Well, that's part of our adaptability, and we can live. It is amazing if you go up to the Arctic or even Northern Europe, people were able to live in those environments because they could eat a lot of animal-sourced foods. But when we look carefully and in our long-term follow-up studies, people who persist in today's environment eating those kinds of diets, they have more diabetes, more cardiovascular disease, and don't live as long. So on the other hand, we have the experience very well studied in the Mediterranean region where people ate a largely plant-sourced diet with small amounts of animal-sourced proteins, and those populations eating those diets traditionally live much longer. And we now see the biochemical reasons why, that those kind of diets are less saturated fat, more unsaturated fat that lowers blood LDL cholesterol, which we know is a strong risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Those kind of diets, it's also what they have, nuts, seeds, lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, those all have positive health benefits. So the healthy vegan diet will be very high, not just in those health-promoting foods. It's not just the absence of red meat.
Right, right. Let me get to a few more of your comments in our minutes we have left. I want to talk about how to make veganism or vegetarianism work and also how to make it delicious. A few more comments first, though. Meg tweeted, "Vegans aren't the only ones who can be pushy. I've met plenty of people following a paleo diet that think their way is the only way. Same with gluten-free, whether they suffer from celiac disease or not." Neil is in Durham, North Carolina. Neil writes, "Just thought I'd respond to the point about not being able to afford being vegan. Beans and rice, baby. Beans and rice." Tim emailed, "Why does becoming vegan make people think animals will stop being killed for food? Humans have been eating animals for all of existence. I say this as somebody who loves animals and still eat them, but do not wish for their mistreatment." Foxy Grandpa tweeted, "I tried to be vegan, but I just ended up hungry all the time." Afia, what about that? How do you stay full as a vegan?
I mean, you just have to eat. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of people become vegan and they take everything out, but they don't add anything new in, right? So it's like, I don't eat meat, but they don't know what to eat. So one of our principles for the RBG Fit Club is knowledge. So you have to get the knowledge before you just start doing something. You know what I'm saying? Anything you do new, you want to get the knowledge. So make sure you know what you're doing. Make sure you're adding full balanced meal. So you have a protein, you have a carb, you have a green vegetable. Half of your plate should be greens at every single meal. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you're loading up with high fat foods in the vegan diet, which would be coconut, avocado, nuts and seeds, things like that. So just making sure you are eating a balanced diet daily, getting in greens daily and all of that,
right,
will make sure that you're not hungry all the time.
I might also suggest that there's a difference between being full and being done. Like if you eat for about 20 minutes, your body will begin to tell you, okay, I think we're done, as opposed to just like hitting a buffet line and loading up at the trough. But I did want to get to another challenge of veganism. And Stephanie, I wanted to get this to you. It's a voicemail from a listener in the South. Listen.
Hi, my name's Kimberly from Kernersville, North Carolina, and I was a vegan for a whole year in 2013. At the time I started really just for the weight loss benefits that I heard comes with being a vegan. I lost about 25 pounds, and that was fantastic. But while I was in school, I had more time on my hands to prep meals and snacks throughout the day. Where I live in North Carolina, it's hard to get a quick bite to eat that's within a vegan diet. So I graduated December 2013. I found a job that traveled, required me to travel often, and it just wasn't feasible to be a vegan anymore. There are not a lot of restaurants in North Carolina, and I can imagine throughout the United States that caters to a vegan diet.
Kimberly, thanks for sharing your story with us. Stephanie, I know we're low on time, but for people who are trying to make being vegan work within kind of a mainstream world, particularly if there aren't a whole lot of specifically vegan options, what might you suggest?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, being in D.C., it's very, very lucky. And major cities, it's so much easier to do it quickly. You know, I know she mentioned in her comment that she used to do meal prep, and that is really... It is huge. I think with any diet, any healthy attempt at any omnivore or not, or vegan, you need to put some thought and some time into it. And my recommendation to people, and this comes from me being in the past having been a personal chef. Obviously now I'm a restaurant chef, and it's a very different way of cooking. But, you know, Do a little bit of research. It was, you know, already like discussed that you want to go into something with knowledge. And if that means like going on a blog and looking up like, hey, how can I look at make a meal in 10 ingredients or less or 30 minutes or less? Do that. And that's probably going to be the easiest way.
Stephanie Tarnowski, the sous chef at the Fancy Radish. Stephanie, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Afia Ibamu, the author of The Vegan Soul Food Guide to the Galaxy. Thanks, Afia.
Thank you.
And Dr. Walter Willett, a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Thanks, Dr. Willett.
Good to talk to you.
This conversation was produced by Paige Osborne and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of our team online at theoneA.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
Are rent prices leveling off? What's the best job after college? And is our labor market actually healthy? Listen to Planet Money's daily podcast, The Indicator, to find out.